And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. This week, our leading lady, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, is on assignment, so it's just me and my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being on the show.
Very happy to be here, David. Thank you.
So it's you know, the wheel keeps rolling with it comes to, you know, public affairs and political things, and now we've just seen the close of another primary election. Oftentimes the primary election in the odd year doesn't attract that much attention, but we had some serious stuff go down this time around.
Yeah, some of the really important things that happen in Pennsylvania elections on these so-called off years are judicial elections, for example, and there were two of those statewide judicial offices that were on the ballot going into this primary election season. And there was a Republican primary for a Commonwealth Court position. Mm-hmm. And the Commonwealth Court is an intermediate appellate court that deals with state issues primarily.
Mm-hmm.
An attorney named Matt Wolford secured the win in that race and is going to be the fall flag carrier for that seat against a Democrat. And then in Superior Court, there's the other mid-level appellate court in Pennsylvania. Attorney Maria Batista emerged the winner of the primary.
On the Republican side.
On the Republican side. And she has a Democratic opponent for the fall, a former state rep, Brandon Newman, who actually I served in the House with Brandon back in the day when I was in the state House. And
he's been a Common Pleas court judge since then.
Correct. He left the General Assembly to go be a judge back home in his home county.
Well, and it's something where I remember Representative Newman before he was Judge Newman, and he was a big champion of the trial bar, of the litigation industry, and certainly they'll be very strongly behind him to try to get one of their own in a black robe on the statewide bench.
And that's why these elections end up being so important, because, you know, we don't often understand that because of the nature of We watch the advertising, all the activity that's there for candidates running for governor or state senator or U.S. senator, that sort of thing. Much of the work that impacts Pennsylvanians happens through the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a radical justice on the courts at that intermediate appellate level, it can cause some serious heartburn down the road.
So these are races that we'll be talking about more between now and November. So it's just the two statewide judicial races, one on the Commonwealth Court, one on the Superior Court. And then, of course, on the November ballot, there'll be the retention votes for the incumbent jurists whose 10-year terms are up.
Right. And that means they don't have to run for re-election necessarily, but they have to run in order to determine whether there would be the potential of a new election.
Right. It's an up-down, yes-no vote on whether or not that particular jurist should continue. Also, in the odd year election, important local elections, and we saw a real transformational election out in Pittsburgh, where incumbent Mayor Ed Gainey was defeated by his challenger, the Allegheny County Comptroller, Corey O'Connor. And so this is two consecutive elections where Pittsburgh has seen its incumbent mayor kicked out.
And previously, Pittsburgh had been a very stable environment in terms of longevity of the mayor and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing this I think what you're seeing is really because by there's a political, ideological struggle going on in the background, in this case on the Democratic side,
right,
as between progressives and more old school or traditional Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been going on in Pittsburgh. And I think the fact that the mayor was, you know, lost the primary is a big deal. And it signals that there's at least still some life in the old blue dog Democrat idea of a Western Pennsylvania Democrat who also fights for some values that are shared by many in the middle class.
Yes. And I think also just a question of governance, because the progressives, the far left, have a lot of really kooky ideas about permitting drug use and homelessness and things that we've seen happen out in Pittsburgh that were really shocking, you know, tent cities and, you know, people on the streets downtown, clearly with, you know, mental illness and or, you know, drug psychosis, like the fact that the city just seemed so much less safe than in years past. I think that this is a big contribution to the political environment that led to a big change like this. People want to see local government do the things it's supposed to do, you know, clean streets and fill the potholes and make sure that violent crime doesn't get a hold.
And then the other thing is, and it's part of the trend you were discussing, how Pittsburgh seemed to be falling into a different sort of a cultural mindset. In Philadelphia, the district attorney, Larry Krasner, won his primary race.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll be back on the ballot as a Democrat.
Yeah.
And, you know, Larry Krasner is one who has espoused a really radical form of criminal justice reform that involves
right. things. Not prosecuting criminals.
Yeah, it's not. And you know, criminal justice reform is an important subject. And in fact, it's a very bipartisan subject in
Should
Pennsylvania.
Be, yes.
But what Krasner's doing is in a whole different realm
yeah.
of really ignoring the idea that we have laws in the civil society.
And the permissiveness that he has shown, especially with not arresting or charging people who are caught in possession of an illegal firearm or illegally in possession of a firearm. I know those things sound the same, but they're slightly different. But still, if you have a criminal with a gun or a person who holding a gun that is not allowed by law, not licensed, what have you, like if you fail to prosecute those people, it means that there are more guns on the street and more people holding them who are not law abiding, which means that more people get shot. You know, I don't think you have to be some kind of, you know, like mastermind logician to see where those things go. If you catch somebody who's got a gun, who's not supposed to have that gun or any gun at all, you charge that person, you arrest that person, you get that person off the street. Larry Krasner says that's not nice.
And the other piece about the election is simply that all across the state, there were primary races for county row offices
right.
and township supervisors and all that sort of thing, which, again, doesn't make a lot of the headlines, but really determines in many cases how you're going, as an individual citizen, how you're going to interact with government. It'll more typically be your township supervisor or your local county register of wills or whoever it is that you end up doing business with as a citizen. And on the political side are these folks who took the time and effort to run for election in these lower sort of less well-known positions
yes,
across the state.
Less prominent, less glamorous, but still very, very important to the continued successful functioning of you know, of our society. And in the same way that the listeners hear the admonition from me almost every show that representative self-government is not a spectator sport, same thing goes with these local offices. Oftentimes you get your ballot and that no one has filed for a particular position. And, you know, we need to have citizen engagement, including a willingness to, you know, to spend your own time and attention on, you know, on some of these local offices that do the real governing, at least the sorts of things that you as a citizen are probably the most likely to encounter. Like I said before, about making sure that the potholes are filled and that the snow gets plowed and the trash gets hauled away.
Yeah, and that's important to people. People want to have a good quality of life. So, yeah, I would certainly, and I know you join me in commending all those who again, it's a lot of work. They got their name on the
it
ballot.
Is.
They knocked on doors. They faced the potential criticism of their neighbors,
right?
And did the thing that's important. And so, we want to honor that, even though again, it doesn't really make the headlines,
right? But it's that kind of quiet, loyal service to the community that that again helps us to live out, you know, our American dream, this ongoing American experiment. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So we survived this election, And so this sets us up for November, where we'll have these key races. Obviously, both Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are very heavily registered to the one side, Philadelphia especially. And so, you know, we expect to see those primary candidate winners elected into office and to take the oath in January. The, you know, the statewide races of the judicial races that we mentioned, that those two, those will attract a lot of attention. So people can expect to, you know, see ads and receive mailers and all those things. But of course, that for each one of these milestones that we pass, it brings us closer to the big enchilada of 2026, where we'll go through everything all over again, where we have this time around, we have, you know, half the state Senate, every member of the state House, but also that we'll have a race for governor.
Indeed. And, you know, Pennsylvania, it continues to be a purple state.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a state where you can sit and think, well, you know, the Democrats own that state. They can win the governorship. They can expand their House majority. They can take majority in the Senate. And others say, well, you know, the Republicans can do that. It's Pennsylvania is a state that's always up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, right now we have this sort of split government where the two legislative bodies are controlled by separate parties.
Mm-hmm.
The governor is a Democrat, so he can align with the Democrat House to the extent he chooses to. But with the GOP-controlled Senate, it's tough for either side to get their agenda.
Yeah, nobody gets to run the table.
Exactly. So hopefully in an ideal world, it brings us to sensible, practical political compromise. In the real world, it also creates just a lot of times a reaction of divisiveness and anger.
Right.
But the system is designed to represent the people in a place where they can advocate for the causes they believe in.
Yes. And you know, and it, again, as the listeners often hear me say on this show, the foundational fact of Pennsylvania is that the king did not know what was over here when he gave the land grant to the Penn family. And so, you know, Pennsylvania is a big, wildly diverse state geographically. And that, you know, it's no wonder that Pennsylvania continues to be, you know, a swing state because of the really profound regional differences depending on where you are in the Commonwealth.
And that's been the case even back before Pennsylvania was a state and after the king made his what's the right word I'm looking for, the grant,
yes,
to the Penn family. But I've recently been reading a book, The Penmen of the Revolution, about John Dickinson,
mm-hmm.
Who was one of the original creators of the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation.
Mm-hmm.
But more interestingly, he served as a Pennsylvania General Assembly member. He served as the president of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
He was also elected to serve as the president of Delaware.
Yes, the lower counties.
The lower counties. And he was literally, he was so popular, he was so respected that he would win elections sometimes even without running. But he exemplified that careful depth of knowledge and exercise of legislative authority in a way that politicians today, you don't often see folks like John Dickinson, but he set an example of serious, like taking the office very seriously.
Right, right. And the responsibility of governing and governing well. I mean, I really do hope, you know, this time around that we do have a meaningful, you know, gubernatorial race. My hope would be that would be the stage upon which those really, really important debates are conducted. But, you know, 4 years ago that Governor Shapiro's challenger more or less refused to engage him, pretty much refused to talk to anybody who didn't already support him, and that's how we got such a lopsided outcome. And, you know, in the election before that, you know, the Governor Tom Wolf ran for re-election and won. And immediately after he won, he said that he was for mass commercializing recreational marijuana. And my thought was, you know, that's probably an issue that should have been hashed out during the campaign. Like, if you're running and you are going to do certain things if you get elected or reelected, you should tell people about that. And again, he didn't, and he just, you know, just dropped this bombshell as a big surprise. And I just thought that that was very unfortunate. I mean, I have strong views on that. Everybody knows. But even if it wasn't that particular issue, if in a second term, the governor plans on doing really, you know, consequential things, things that are high impact, it's healthier for the body politic to get that validated, to get the proverbial mandate, as it were, that this is what I said I was going to do, and now I am properly empowered by the people to pursue that agenda.
Indeed, indeed. And so as we bring that whole conversation back to what's happening now in the Capitol,
right,
we're gearing up. We're seeing both legislative chambers gearing up for what will be most likely the budget fight, mm-hmm. leading to the state budget deadline of June 30th. This week and next week are non-session weeks, but then the both chambers will come back into session in June, and they've got a lot of session days scheduled. And we will see this process playing out in the real world as to how do we effectively dispose of the need to take care of all these different situations in Pennsylvania that cost money.
Right.
And prioritize those in a way that makes sense for taxpayers and yes. the long-term strength of the state without tapping out our reserves and our rainy day fund.
Right. And again, I don't want to be tedious, but this is just too important to let go unsaid. Pennsylvania has a structural budget deficit. That means that mandatory spending is increasing faster and at a greater amount than the growth in revenue from the natural expansion of our economy. This is being driven by our demographic crisis, where we have a large and growing population of senior citizens, of people who are beyond their working years, people who themselves oftentimes require taxpayer-funded services, and we don't have enough of younger people still in their working lives to pay the taxes to sustain state government at its current scale. Like, this is the foundational fact of Pennsylvania's state budget. And this is something that Governor Shapiro has not addressed in any way at all. Like, these are all facts that he's just going to completely ignore. And it's putting us in a very dangerous path because, you know, we spent too much last year. Well, the legislature gave him more than they should have. And I was with the House Republican leader, Mr. Topper, Jesse Topper from Bedford County. And he said, even if we flat funded the budget this year, we're still in deficit 2 years from now. So we're in trouble, and I don't know how we're going to get out of it.
Yeah, constraint is going to be necessary in order to move forward.
And growth. I mean, the combination of spending restraint now and moving the needle on Pennsylvania competitiveness so we can have stronger economic growth, so that there are more jobs and there's more opportunity, so we can keep more of those younger people, maybe attract more of those younger people from other states, and in that way build out a healthier tax base so that the natural growth of the economy will throw off enough revenue to meet those mandatory obligations of spending. But Pennsylvania has had chronic economic underperformance, and this is longstanding. This is year after year, decade after decade under, you know, governors and legislatures of both parties, that because we can't get out of our own way in Harrisburg, our economy does not grow as fast as the national average. And so with every year, we sort of quietly, invisibly fall further behind.
We don't live in a vacuum.
Correct.
What we do is in competition with all the other states around us and the states that are farther away from us. And they're getting the quality, well-educated, hardworking people that belong in Pennsylvania and taking them elsewhere.
Yes, sir. And that's what we're trying to address, trying to turn around oh boy, we got a long way to go. So it's going to be exciting. I'm not going to take any bets about finishing the budget before the constitutional deadline. I think people should just like not make summer plans. But anyway, I'm glad that we get to go through that together at the close of our time here, Steve. Where can people go to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you do?
They can go to CommonwealthFoundation.org on the web.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. So we'll welcome Rebecca back next time. But from Steve and me, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.